everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Pagan Spirituality Today, episode number 12. As always, I am your host, Kveldrida. Today is August the 2nd, 2009. I'd like to say Happy Lammas, Lunisod, Frayfaxing, or whatever your tradition or coven calls it. I hope you had a wonderful holiday, had a great ritual. I went to a wedding yesterday on Lammas for a pagan couple that we know. It was a combination Christian-pagan service. It was quite nice, a big to-do, all the friends and family. It was outdoors in a park. It was a lovely time. We had a fantastic day for it. It has been exceedingly hot in Western Washington. I don't know if you've seen in the news. We've been breaking records for temperatures. Here in my little hamlet, it was gorgeous yesterday, probably 68 degrees with a light breeze, beautiful sunny skies, a fantastic day to be married or handfasted, all in all. This is episode number 12, try number 3, or perhaps try number 4. Again, I've had some microphone problems. Again, I've had some problems organizing my thoughts and focusing. Oni finally broke down and bought us a new microphone. Unfortunately, the last microphone we had, we barely got 3 months, 2 shows use out of it before, I guess, I broke it. It produces a horrible static sound now, and it's not usable. I am loath to buy something twice. I seriously considered letting the show go until I could earn a little extra money to buy a microphone. But Oni would not have any of it, and she researched reviews for microphones and found this one that I'm using today, which, by the way, I really like. Today's music comes from the CD Putumayo Presents Sahara Lounge. The opening song is called Shiraz by an artist known as Sharif. Today's closing song is called Fly by Ilhan Ersahin. Putumayo has an entire series called Lounge. It is made up of down-tempo, generally electronic music, produced by various artists around the world. This one, Sahara Lounge, focuses on people from North Africa and the Near East, the Middle East. It's one of my favorite records, and it was particularly requested by my friend Golden Bird Rising, as I will be doing an interview with her in the second half of the show. In a series of interviews I hope to be doing that I am tentatively calling Pagan Voices. To explain a little bit about why I want to do this series, I want to talk a little bit about my own background, my own magical and spiritual training, and how it differs from the more traditional training, and how it produced in me a more unique path. These folks that I'll be interviewing in my series, Pagan Voices, are also doing a more personal and unique expression of spirituality. Stuff that I don't think you will be reading about in the average book or hearing about from your average pagan websites. So I would like to bring some of these folks and their stories to you. By the by, before I get to the interview, I want you to know I don't think I did a very good job in this interview. The limitations of the interview, the fact that I talk far too much, that my guest is not able to get some of her thoughts out because I am cutting her off or speaking over her, these are entirely my problems. I have to work out my interviewing skills much more than I have so far. So in no way is the quality of this interview the fault of Golden Bird Rising. I just wanted to put that into the record before we get to it. But first, talk a little bit about my own training. As I've said before, I became a magical person in 1989. I would not have called myself a pagan, nor would I have said that I was particularly a religious person at that time. I was seeking a religion. I was seeking a relationship to divinity. But the way I got started was straightforward magical and spiritual training. My teacher, Steve, had 3 teachers of his own. One was a ceremonial magician. One was a shaman taught by a traditional Lakota shaman. The other was a married couple who were practicing, I believe, Alexandrian witchcraft at the time. All three of his teachers knew about the other. He was learning from all three simultaneously, which I have not, to this day, met anyone else in that situation. So, right off the bat, my teacher's path was unique, and what we did together was very different from the average pagan that I meet today. First of all, I did almost no reading the first 2 years. At that time, we were living in Germany, and pagan books were simply not available on the base. We could buy some pagan books written by German authors or in the German language, but I don't read German very well. I barely speak it. That was not really of any use to us. Also, Steve didn't feel that it was necessary. He had brought some books with him on basic magical theory, basic concepts, and I read those books because he didn't want to take the time to explain each and every minute concept. So he would have me read a section of a book. We would talk about what I thought it meant and what he thought it meant, how it worked within the world, and then we would just do things. We would try stuff. We would do exercises or experiments that his teachers had given him. He would make up new exercises or ideas. Most of my training in those first year and a half, 2 years, was experiential. The vast majority was experiential. He tried to interest me in ceremonial magic. I learned a few things about that system. It was not to my liking at all. I have no interest in it and no talent for it. It's something that he was quite good at, and he did continue to try to get me to see the value of it. But for me, it doesn't have any value. It's lacking completely. It was the shamanic stuff, the journey work, the spirit work, the healing work that I took to immediately, that seemed like something I was born to. So it's what we studied most. Although we did do a lot of magic, a lot of psychic skills development, before we started working on anything religious. And the way I'm using the word religious in this context is a way in which you deal with the divine and spirits. A tradition, so to speak. We dealt with spirits and we dealt with the divine, but we did it in a completely unstructured fashion. We dealt with them in the way that we found that worked for us at that moment. There was no attempt to build a lasting tradition. We simply focused on what was effective. And I continue to believe to this day that working with what is effective, what is useful in your own life, is the most important thing. Far more important than any tradition or any concept that anyone else has done. If it's not working for you, why would you do it? What's the point? One of the things Steve said to me early on is that I had no preconceptions of what was possible, what was likely or unlikely, and that magically, that is a tremendous gift. I didn't quite know what he meant at the time, but I see it now. Too many people spend far too much time telling an initiate or a new person, you will not be able to do this, you will not be able to do that, this will be incredibly hard, this will be incredibly easy. I don't think that's valid, and I don't engage in it at all, and I don't support it. Don't get me wrong, I am not suggesting that you tell your newbies, look, you might be able to fly. I can't fly, but maybe you can. I think we can all agree the likelihood of actual physical levitation is fairly slim, but I would never say it's impossible. I don't know what's impossible. I'm not in a position to say. What I am in a position to say is I have not been able to do X, or I have been able to do Y. Why don't you, student, give it a shot? And if my example is helpful to you, then use it. And if my way of learning doesn't work for you, we're going to have to find another way for you to learn about these things. I don't feel like you're helping anyone by putting your own spin on everything. Just because something was hard for me does not mean it will be hard for the next guy or gal, and vice versa. Steve was constantly telling me, I had trouble with this, let's see what happens when you do it. That was so freeing to me, for him to say, I'm not in a position to tell you what will happen. I can only tell you what happened when I tried this. There is something about a person teaching you to simply accept you don't know. Not to have confidence necessarily, not to have doubt, just to be neutral and allow the results to speak for themselves. Steve and I did more magic and spiritual work than we ever read about. We talked an awful lot about spiritual work and magic. It was our main topic of conversation. It was our main focal point that we dealt with each other on. I don't know that we could have been friends without that shared interest. We were extremely different people, both emotionally and spiritually. As adults, I'm not sure we would get along. I don't know how he has changed from that time to this, but I know how much that I have changed. I have always been introspective. I have always wondered about my own motives and my own behavior and tried to find the reasons behind my own actions. Steve was so unconcerned about his motivations, so uninterested in his own actions and in questioning them. It made him a difficult person to deal with at times. It made him a person that certainly I could understand why other pagans or magical people would view him as dangerous or unstable. But despite that fact, I was able to see how our interaction, our work together, was helpful to me and to him. I feel like he got quite a bit out of it as well. This was his first opportunity to be the teacher. He had spent many years at the feet of other people, learning a great deal of stuff, but he had never tried to impart it to anyone else. And his communication skills were not fantastic. It was something he struggled with, and I struggled with trying to understand him at times. I feel like we both grew up a lot through that experience. Some of the things that Steve told me about his own past, about his own path, turned out to be exaggerations. But at the time, I suspected they might be. I never took anything he said for granted. I never assumed any of it was the gospel truth, only that it was the truth as he saw it at that moment. And he was never offended by this. We were able to say anything to each other, friendly or hostile. As long as we believed it was true, we spent a lot of time arguing, but it didn't hurt our relationship because we argued about what our perspective on truth was. We argued about things that mattered to us. I feel like that was very helpful to me. I had been a relatively shy, quiet person who was unwilling to express my most intimate opinions publicly or to other people, particularly with any force or to fight for my own opinion. Steve kind of taught me how to do that and how to be comfortable with that. And later, with much practice, I learned how to do it without being insulting. With Steve, I never had to worry about being insulting. We insulted each other all the time. We were learning to communicate without social grace, without kindness, but I learned that later. Most of what I wanted to know and what Steve wanted to teach me, magically speaking, spiritually speaking, was why do things work? What is the how and the why behind things? Whereas he learned shamanism from a man taught the Lakota tradition, Sioux Indian tradition. I didn't want to learn the Sioux tradition, despite the fact that he wanted to teach me that. I wanted to learn a pan-cultural shamanic understanding. What is behind it? If a Lakota does a healing ceremony in this fashion, but a person living in the Andes Mountains in Peru does it in this fashion, what are the similarities? What are the underlying characteristics behind those things? My entire magical and spiritual training was about why do things work for me? Why do things work for Steve? Not how does this particular person do it and let's emulate them. We were in complete agreement that efficacy is much more important than tradition. I'm not maligning traditional witchcraft or druidism or any other group. I have a great deal of respect for folks who follow a tradition. However, I am constantly perplexed by people who follow a tradition for whom it does not work. If you were, for instance, a Gardnerian witch, and you found that those ceremonies do not move you, that theology is not helping you grow as a human being, why on earth would you continue within that tradition? I don't have an answer for that, and obviously most people would say, rationally, you wouldn't. Yet I have met many people who follow a tradition for whom they find no particular benefit. I have known many people who continue in a tradition in which they do not find benefit. They are not growing. They are not moving forward, but it's what they know, so they stick with it. I personally have no patience for that or interest in it, and neither did Steve. On the note of tradition, Steve had been an apprentice to a magical lodge, a ceremonial magical lodge, and was exposed to first degree teaching in an Alexandrian coven. He took the entire first degree. And he shared a great deal of that information with me. And I realized that most traditionalists would see that as a horrible thing. I'm not condoning what he did, nor am I really damning what he did. That was between him and those people who gave him the information. I don't use either of those things in my practice today. I feel gratified that I'm aware of what other people do, but none of it turned out to be for me. It was not what I wanted. It was not the direction I was going in. My goal all along was relationship. If there was a god or there were gods or goddesses or whatever, my intention was to get to know them, learn to communicate with them, and find out what they thought about me and what their vision for my life was, assuming they had one. Later, when I became aware of the concept of ancestors and an ancestor realm, I wanted to know what they thought of me and what their vision for me was, if they had one. All my magical intent, all my skills and my psychic skills existed to serve the idea of relationship. And then, once a relationship was established, if one could be, how can I translate that relationship into the real world, the physical world? How can I spread my understanding of the divine, my interaction with the divine, into some kind of useful, productive action that affects not only myself, but other people? That was my goal more or less from day one. My goal at no time was to be part of a particular specific tradition, although I did in the end become a member of an initiatory tradition, which I still am to this day. It is only part of my life. It is only part of what I do. And I reserve the right to interpret things, even within that tradition, as my intuition directs me to do. I follow rules that I am given because I have committed to do so. That does not mean I accept the theological or spiritual precepts given to me in exactly the way they were given to me. One of the most important things Steve ever taught me, and I want to mention here for any newer folks in paganism, or in a magical life if you don't consider yourself religious, your intuition should be one of the most important priorities in your life. Developing it, I mean. You should learn the art of discernment. How do you know what website is giving you information that is going to be useful to to you. How do you know what book, what author, what podcast has information that is valuable and credible? You could read every book on the planet and try them all out. That is a valid way of doing things, albeit slow. The other way, the more effective way, is to develop your intuition, your inner knower, as it were, and ask your intuition. I'm looking at this book. I'm leafing through it. What do you think? Is this for me? Is this useful? Is this going to work for me? Or should I set it down? It also works for dealing with other people. You meet someone who might be a potential mentor or whose coven you might be considering joining. Use your intuition to feel that person out. Is this person a good match for me? In my mind, I might think so, but your mind can be fooled. Your mind can have other priorities. Your intuition is the one that is going to tell you at the deeper spiritual level, yeah, this is a person that should be in your life, or no, they definitely should not, or it's neutral. It doesn't make any difference either way. You could learn something here, or you could pass this up and go on. You've got to develop that. If you want to be successful in whatever your goals are, magically and spiritually, and I would maintain materially, you need intuition. You need discernment. It is something that Steve drilled in me over and over again, and at times to his own detriment, because some of Steve's background, some of what he talked about, turned out not to be entirely true. Some of it was his perspective. Some of it was him wanting to exaggerate his own experience and knowledge. My discernment helped me understand where his motivations were coming from, why he would say some of the things that he did that I could tell he didn't really believe. The other thing I want to point out is I think there is too much fear going on between teachers and students. Too many dire warnings of, if you try this, some bad thing will happen. If you do that, this bad thing will happen. Look, maybe it will, maybe it won't. I'm not saying go headlong into foolishness. What I am saying is, if you feel ready to try something, if you feel that you have done what needs doing in the way of protection or preparation, go ahead and experiment. Go ahead and try. Unless you are not an experiential learner and you are more a knowledge-based learner, you will figure out much more by trying things, by doing things. You will understand what is effective. You will understand what is useless to you. You will much more quickly come to realize what your talents are, what your deficiencies are, by doing things. If you can be mentally prepared to accept whatever the consequences are, this is important. Being ready to accept the consequences, to deal with things if they go wrong, being willing and confident that you can fix them, or that you know someone you could go to help you fix them. If you have that, if you feel that you are ready, try stuff. I cannot express enough how important that is, how useful it has been to me. The other thing that Steve always ingrained in my mind is no one can tell you what you're capable of. They can only tell you what they themselves are capable of. Because something is difficult for me or easy for me does not mean it will be so for you. Because I learned a particular psychic skill in this way does not mean that's the best way for you to learn it. Don't let people tell you that they know you won't be able to do this or you will be able to do that. It's not true. They don't know. They know their own experience and the experience of others they have met. That is all. Likelihood is a different matter. Possibility is a completely different matter. What is possible? What is likely? We all have our opinions about such things, but we can't say that we know, not with any real ability to back up such a claim. One last thing. What I think is missing in a lot of people's spiritual and magical education is fun, enjoyment, and pleasure. If everything you do magically and spiritually is a difficult, tedious, slow task, which many of the things will be, and there is no way to avoid that in some cases. But if you don't have some pleasure in it, some joy in it, who's going to stay with that? Who's going to continue to follow something that is tedious and arduous all the time? Folks, you've got to have some lighthearted fun. You've got to have some silliness, some willingness to laugh at yourself, to make spirituality joyful and pleasant. Don't forget that part. Don't glaze over it or leave it out, particularly if you're the mentor or the teacher. You've got to find a way to make some of this fun. And it is possible. I had a great deal of fun the first couple years of my magical life, despite the fact that I did magic or talked about magic or studied magic probably 10 to 12 hours a week for 18 months. It was like a second job. Yet a lot of it was fun. A lot of it was adventurous and new and exciting. Try to find a way to put some of that into your own experience. It will be very helpful in propelling you forward, I think. So that's all I'm going to talk about from my own experience today. I'm going to go into my interview now. I would like to know what parts of the interview you like, if there are questions I should have asked that you would like to hear asked of the future folks that I talk to. How is the length? Clearly, I know I talk too much, so you guys don't have to mention that. But let me know, because I would like to develop a format that each interview will follow after this one. And I'd like to do a much better job, so I'm asking you for your help, your suggestions on refining my interview skills, interview questions, what it is you all would want to know. So without further ado, here's my interview. I'm going to end the show right after the interview. It'll go right into the closing music. So thanks for listening, and I hope to be getting something out relatively soon. Take care, everyone. Blessings to you. Peace be with you. I have a guest with me today, Golden Bird Rising. You met her in episode 10. Well, she happens to be a priestess of the Sumerian god An, and I've asked her to come in and talk to me a little bit about that tradition, how she got started with it, explain a little bit about it to you, the listener, because I imagine it's something you haven't come across before. I certainly don't know any other Sumerian practitioners. So thanks for coming in, Golden Bird.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, well, I have some questions written down, something that we can go with. I'm going to start with number one at the beginning. How did you get started with this tradition?
Well, Kvelderde, I would like to ask you to begin that because I was introduced to this tradition through you.
What you're doing today is very different, but in my early 20s, I went through this Sumerian-Babylonian phase, and I knew it wasn't my path, but for some reason I spent 6 months studying Sumerian gods and Babylonian gods and learning their mythology, and I went through a whole list of what tools might they use, what materials, that cedar wood, for instance, was most common, and they had bronze tools. I was fascinated with this culture for a couple of months. I made a whole notebook of information that sat on a shelf for literally years until I met Golden Bird and her husband, Ivaldi, who you all met in episode 10. And it came out in discussions with her and some of her spirit guides that she should look into the Sumerian pantheon. I have all this material that I haven't known what to do with. Let me pass that on to you. Maybe that's going to be useful to you. That's really where I go out of the story, and it's...
Yeah, well, I took that information that you had researched, and I just took off with it. I spent a lot of time sitting out in the cliffs, in the desert, just getting close to Lord An, being with him, getting to know who he is, and also doing a lot of scholarly research on
checking the university websites and that kind of stuff, not neo-pagan material?
Yes, yeah.
How long have you been doing this? How long have you been actively involved in Sumerian religion?
Approximately 10 years, I believe.
In Wicca, most people's calendar, it's an 8 Sabbath calendar. That's what most people are familiar with. How does your calendar work, and how many rituals do you have per year?
I have 2 main rituals a year based on the lunar calendar. The Sumerians refer to these rituals as the Akitu festivals.
Now, what are they surrounding? Is it a moon phase that's the issue? Are they seasonal? How does that work exactly?
It has to do with the planting times of the year. And
okay.
It's a planting festival. And the other one is the harvest festival. And it has to do with not only the harvest, but there being a period of calm where the earth replenishes itself and restores so that when the next Akitu comes around in the spring, the earth will be ready to supply again.
Okay, so your rituals are 5-6 months apart. They're kind of cutting the year in half.
Yeah.
What gods or goddesses do you worship in this tradition? Who do you work with?
I primarily work with Lord An. However, I also work with Lords Utu and Nana for various rites throughout the year.
An, Utu, and Nana are probably not deities my listeners are very familiar with. Can you tell us just a little bit about each one?
Sure. Lord An is sky deity.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because the other Sumerian deities, you can find depictions that are very human-like.
Mm-hmm.
But with An, it's always just a symbol. Like, they were never able to put a human form to him. He was the supreme being. Lord Utu is the sun god.
Okay.
And Lord Nana is the moon god.
So Lord Nana, you're saying the moon is a male figure.
That's right.
That's interesting because it's very uncommon for pagan traditions.
Yeah.
Is your tradition intended to be just a personal faith for you, or are you developing a group faith, something for other people to do?
It has been very solitary so far. It's been about me and Lord An, our relationship and developing what's meaningful to him and I. I haven't ruled out that in the future this may be a shared religion, but so far it's just been my own personal path.
Well, a lot of pagans, when they develop a new path, everyone assumes this is a whole new publicly available path, but this is something very personal, very
it is.
Much about you and God, you yeah. and On.
I have not thought of it as a public thing. That I think for me that would take away from the personal side of it.
I appreciate you talking about this because being such a personal path, no one else is going to know about it. They wouldn't know that there are people out there doing such personal stuff, such exploratory stuff. Do you know anyone else who's doing something like this? Have you met anyone else involved in Sumerian religion?
I have not talked to anyone else doing anything like I'm doing. When I was doing my research, my scholarly research on the internet, I did come across some neo-pagans that were practicing, you know, working with Sumerian gods. I did not really spend very much time looking at what they were doing because it didn't really seem to relate to what I was doing. That's pretty much the only people I know that...
Wow, so this is a path of one.
Yeah, yeah.
What resources in the way of books and websites and stuff have you used? What's been helpful to you?
Well, a great introductory book is called Gods, Demons, and Symbols of Ancient Mesopotamia, an Illustrated Dictionary by Jeremy Black and Anthony Green. That's a great introductory book that gives you a sentence or two up to a paragraph on pretty much everything that I've needed to know about, including some pictures. So it's very helpful. I have lots of other books. The internet has been a great resource. I found Sumerian Lexicon so that I can get actual translations of words.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lots of great scholarly information on the internet.
They were a literate society, and
yes,
that's very helpful. Most of our Celtic ancestors and Germans were pre-literate. We don't have that wealth of knowledge to draw upon. So the book that you were mentioning, the dictionary, that you said was the best book. Now, that is all about Sumerian stuff. It's not all Near Eastern figures or Babylonian. It's just a dictionary for Sumerian gods and things within their mythologies.
Demons. Symbols.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I remember noticing about the Sumerian theology, is that they were very concerned with demons. There was many, many little spells and incantations for demons not rattling your pots and pans. Exactly. I mean, demons are responsible for everything in that culture. It is pre-Christian, by the way, and it seems very likely that it's where the Jews and the Christians got their idea of a dichotomy between good and evil spirits.
Yeah. I have had, you know, quite a bit of experience dealing with ugly little things like that. However, I don't think it's been to quite the extent that Sumerians focus on.
Okay, my last question for you is your interaction with An. Do you use a divination source? Do you work with him in meditation? Is it a direct communication? How does that work?
Direct communication. I channel Lord An. Mm-hmm. And also, meditation has been very helpful for me. I heard a quote recently by Mother Teresa. It was Dan Rather was interviewing her, and he said to her, "What do you say to God when you pray?" And she said, "I don't say anything, I listen." And after a minute, Dan Rather says, "Well, what does Jesus say to you?" She said, "Oh, he doesn't say anything either, he just listens. And if you don't understand that, I can't explain it to you." I feel like I can explain a little bit.
So what does that mean exactly?
Well, I think people who are familiar with meditation can understand that. You reach a place of quiet understanding. And when you're in that place with God, it's just an expansive place of deep peace and understanding.
Would you call that understanding more intuitive level than verbal and intellectual?
Yes. I mean, there's communication there, but it's not so much verbal as just a heartfelt understanding. Something, yeah.
It's sensing, it's feeling, yes. It's experience.
Yeah. Which okay. Sometimes can go beyond what words can express.
Can do, right. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. I find this stuff pretty exciting myself. I mean, I enjoy the diversity of paths that people are on. I happen to know a lot of interesting people like yourself. I want to introduce my listeners to a wider view. And I think voices like yours are the ones that are missing in the greater pagan discussion. Here is someone who found a completely unique way of moving forward, is making that work, is growing with it. And I think people need to hear about it.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
I have one more question I wanted to ask you. Your name, Golden Bird Rising, is a very interesting and unusual name. How did you get that name?
Lord An gave it to me. And it's actually not Golden Bird Rising. That name is the English translation of a Sumerian word, which I will keep between Lord An and I.
Sure.
But that name came right from God.
I have a name that Odin gave me, which I also will not share. It is a private thing, but names are a special thing, and Kveldrida is my chosen name. It is a name I will use publicly, and then I have a private name. I don't think there's enough pagans who understand that context, that your spirits, your ancestors, your gods may know you by a certain name, may label you a certain way. And there's a special connection that comes with that kind of naming, don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
Well, that's really interesting. I've enjoyed this a lot, and I'm looking forward to having more people on to discuss their path, but I want to thank you for coming in and talking about this.
Well, thank you.